On this week's show, our month-long celebration of horror continues as Matthew Cote, game director of Behavior Interactive, joins us for a macabre look into Dead by Daylight. That's right, folks, Dead by Daylight. This is a huge one for us. And he is here to remind us that death is not an escape. This is Nintendo Dual Screens, episode 121. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Nintendo Dual Screens, episode 121 for the week of October 21st, 2019, sponsored by MeltedPins.com. I am one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana, and with me, as always, each and every week, it is Andy Asimakis. How are you, Andy?
I am relieved. I feel very relieved.
Relieved?
Yes, such relief.
So am I. I'm super relieved, and let me tell you why. Streamlabs OBS updated today. It is version 0.18.5. And guess what I have finally at the bottom next to the record button?
And what do you have, Steven?
The running time of the recording.
Oh, I have that. So
yes. Have it on OBS. This is Streamlabs OBS. Yeah. Finally, Streamlabs has added it. So I'm very excited that now I can actually see how long the show is going. All right, for those of you that are new to Nintendo Dual Screens Podcast, this is an interview show where Andy and I bring on an industry guest to talk about the indies and Nintendo's past, present, and future. Nintendo Dual Screens Podcast posts each and every Monday for your listening pleasure on your podcast service of choice, including YouTube, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. And of course, you can find all of our episodes and everything else we do on dualscreens.com. That's D-U-E-L screens.com. Please consider leaving us a review if you use Apple Podcasts or iTunes or whatever the heck they're calling it these days. It helps the show tremendously. Another way you could help the show is if you go to our Patreon. That's patreon.com/NDS podcast, just like our Patreon producer, Alex Gonzalez. I believe he is back to Grandmaster. I don't think he's a demigod this week, but he's working his way up the ranks. And of course, for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, he's a pretty hardcore online Mortal Kombat 11 player, and he always shows us when he's reached high status. So he keeps getting up to demigod, and he's determined to become a full-on god. So good luck, Alex. We can't continue to grow without your support, and each and every one of our Patreon supporters, we cannot continue to grow without your support. Remember, $1 gets you access to our VIP Discord channel, where we invite our indie dev guests to go on there and chat with you guys. You could chat with us each and every day. We're always in there just having a blast, and you also get a bonus episode every month in which you vote the topic that we discuss. And from now until the end of the year, we're actually piloting new podcasts that we're going to be doing in 2020. So it's a really cool way to get in on the pilot episodes of all of those new shows. All right, so Andy, we did something special this week. You did a solo interview.
Yeah, hence my relief.
Matthew. Yes. So before we kick it over to that interview, let's give a little backstory. Tell us, let the listeners in on how this whole thing started.
Right. So we were chatting with Behavior for quite some time leading up to this interview. The initial pitch was to have it done during Comic-Con weekend, but we could not go. And we were going to record last week, but there's a scheduling conflict, and we had both taken off from work to have this interview. But we're like, you know, this has to go down. This has to happen. So we bumped it for this week, and you cannot attend because you were actually sick today.
I was very
sick boy in the morning.
Yes, I couldn't get off of work, and so we were planning on doing this thing. Last night, you and I were working through some audio stuff, and I went to bed
midnight. By the way,
just about midnight. Yeah, and then I woke up at about 5:30 with a fever, and my throat felt like I swallowed glass and then chased it with glue.
Oh no!
It was just awful. So I popped a few Tylenol. I woke up at about 7:15 this morning, and I just went to bed. I texted my manager. I was like, listen, not coming in. fever, sore throat, swollen glands, I'm out. So what I think wound up happening with everything, and by the way, if you hear any background chatter, my wife is doing an appointment. We're recording this while she has an appointment, so I do apologize. But either way, what was I saying? I forget. Oh, so yesterday in the morning, I was feeling like a little bit under the weather. Like I had a little bit of a congestion going on, and I got my flu shot that afternoon. And they say if you have a cold and you get the flu shot, sometimes your body reacts very strangely.
You did it to yourself, is what you're saying.
So I think I did it to myself. Right. So I'm about 6 extra strength Tylenol into my day. It's about 9 p.m. I took 3 in the morning and then 2 this afternoon. So I think I'm going to take another 2 because I could feel myself, my energy starting to sap. But yes, I did not take off of work to do the interview. I actually was just sick. But you got to do the interview solo, and for what I heard, and I did not listen to the whole thing. I do apologize. I had to, you know, take care of the kids, but
and yourself as well,
and myself, yes, of course. But I did listen to about 20 minutes, the first 20 minutes, and I gotta say, you immediately get some really juicy stuff out of them.
Yeah. So just so you all know how much stress I endured over this interview, because usually you're the driver of most of the show, and. You know, I'm like the wisecracking, charming guy in the background, kind of chimes in when he needs to.
The guy in the chair. Yeah.
Sure, right. So much stress because I actually dreamt about this last night. That's how much it was on my mind. I had dreams about the interview. Like, if things going wrong, that's how bad it was. But the second I started recording, and it was all going smoothly with the levels and OBS. It was a really fun interview. And it was fun because we had their PR person also on the call, Marie Bernard, who was...
Safety net.
Right. She was kind of there just in case things that were said shouldn't be said. Or
She was Matthew's handler.
Right. Like, you know, bodyguard of all the secrets. So that was kind of neat. And it led for some really funny conversations and really funny moments. And I also want to give a quick shout out to Reddit, who gave us some amazing questions on this episode.
Yes, thank you very much. Community, the Dead by Daylight community is fantastic.
Like, I tried to get almost all of them in there, but I don't want to keep them on the line all day long. But most of the questions that were asked were answered.
Excellent. Let's kick it right over to it. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's do the transition.
Hey, listeners, I'm here with Matthew Cote, game director and head of partnership for Behavior Entertainment, joined by Marie Bernard, senior PR and events manager over at Behavior as well. How are you guys doing today?
Very good. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, I mean, we were trying to schedule this for quite some time. And before we get into the actual proper interview, I want to just highlight really quickly. You guys have a strict, you only operate during business hours for things like interviews to prevent, I guess, being overworked or burnout. And I just want to address that because when you hear a lot about crunch this day and age in game developing companies, it's a nice thing to hear about how you don't want to wear out your employees too much.
Well, I mean, to be fair, we do make exceptions.
Of course, we're
reasonable people, but yes, as a rule, we do our best to keep work between work hours. Obviously, Marie and I travel a lot. We do a lot of events and things like that, and that takes a lot of our time. It takes a toll, so we want to make sure that we are fresh and happy as much as possible the rest of the time. And we have partners all over the globe, so we need to accommodate some of the time zone and time differences too. But yes, we appreciate that you were understanding of our desire to keep these interviews within the realm of normal working hours.
Yeah, because for us, normally, we'll get up at 6 a.m. if we need to, or do a midnight interview. Because we're all about whatever works for you. If it's a weekend, we'll do it that way. Because Steven and I, who's the other host on the show, who's at work right now, we have a regular 9-to-5 job as well. So scheduling these things during the day is very difficult for us. So, but this had to happen because I love Dead by Daylight. I'm a huge fan of the game. And yeah, so Marie's role in this will be sort of to kind of like safeguard any information that Matthew shouldn't be saying. Is that correct?
Yeah, she will just tackle me to the ground if I'm about to say something stupid.
And I'm ready.
All right, great. So let's kind of do a journey way back for you, Matt. This is more of a developer deep dive for us here on the podcast. So I want to start with just your experience as a young gamer. Like, what got you into video games in general? And what are some of your earliest memories as a young gamer?
Earliest memories would be Commodore 64 in my basement with a couple of my neighbors and friends playing, you know, getting through a whole box of diskettes that I got from someone's older brother that was into copying games and playing Kung Fu and Jumpman and Spy vs. Spy and all these things. That was a huge part of what got me into gaming. I saved all of my money at some point to buy a Sega entertainment system and sold it a week later because I realized all my friends had Nintendos at the time, and I bought one game and I'm like, oh, I won't be able to exchange it with anybody. So I quickly learned that having a community around and having people you can interact with was critical. That was it. But many, many, many hours of playing on the Commodore 64, later the Amiga. That was it for me. It stayed with me until I actually got my own apartment with some roommates, and then we had a computer in there, and then it was weeks on end playing X-Wing and TIE Fighter, hiding in a cupboard, listening to Dead Kennedys in space.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, beautiful.
Did you know from a young age that you'd want to pursue a career in the games industry in some capacity?
Absolutely not.
Oh, wow, okay.
No, because to me it didn't make sense. And it's funny because I had other careers before this. And at some point, I found myself, I was in a sort of a, whatever, government program where you're sort of reevaluating your options as far as careers go. And I was talking to the very clever woman there, and I was telling her about me and what I do and what I like. And she's like, you know, you could have a career in video games. And I just sort of laughed and went, nobody works in video games. Video games are what you play when you're home. and then I took a breather, and I'm like, okay, yeah, maybe this is a gamble I'm willing to make. So I managed to find a good school in Montreal that taught video games. It wasn't that common at the time, but there were a few good places. I got a big loan, so I could actually take that class, very expensive classes. But it landed me a job at EA at the time. I started there, and the rest is history, as they say.
Yeah, it's a big scene now in Canada, the game development scene. A lot of indie studios that we've spoken to are based out of Toronto or Montreal, for example.
Yeah.
You got some good advice there. When I was younger, I wanted to do game development, but it was really poo-pooed by almost everyone around me. And now it's like, it's a multi-billion-dollar industry. What'd you do to me?
But it's interesting, our president, Rémi Racine, actually wrote a very interesting blog post on our official site about the fact that it was essentially advice not to young people wanting to go into a video game. It's almost more addressed to their parents, who often are from a different generation, and they might not understand that it is today not only a viable career, but an extremely rich and vigorous industry, and it's actually a safe bet, you know, that you will find employment and that these companies are still going to be there, you know, many years down the line. It's a long-term thing. It's not just a crazy pipe dream.
Yeah, I used to doodle sprites on my old Tandy 1200 computer when I was a kid. If I had just kept at it, I'd be the next, you know, make the next Messenger game at this point in my age.
Yeah. I get it. Yeah, I got a Tandy too. I was so angry at my mom for that. We got our Commodore 64 stolen at some point. We had a burglar.
Oh my God.
She bought a Tandy to replace it, and I was so upset.
Oh boy.
There was nothing I could do with that thing. Well, there was Summer Games and California Games and King's Quest and Space Quest. Okay, there was a few things, but still.
So you were at EA for a while, and how did you end up on the Behavior team?
So I was at EA. I started as an animator. I was a decent animator, but I know I wasn't, you know, I wasn't going to be the guy who gets the call in 5 years from LucasArts or, I don't know, Pixar saying, we want you for our next project. I was good, but I wasn't a great animator. But I have a big mouth, and I can get people together, and I can rally the troops, and I can organize. So very quickly, I got an opportunity, or someone saw a potential, and I got an opportunity to go into the producer line. And I really immediately recognized that this was the place I needed to be. So I did that at EA for a few years. And then at some point, the Montreal studio was supposed to be a hotbed of new IPs and creation and pure, unadulterated, you know, effervescent joy. And then it sort of changed course a little bit. And at a certain point, it became more of outsourcing for the big studios in the States. And I found myself a little less happy there. It wasn't for me, let's say. Mm-hmm. And a few people that I had worked with in the past were at Behavior, and they started pestering me and telling me how they thought that not only would I find a lot of fun things to do here, but they thought that the company's culture would be a good fit for me.
Right.
So I interviewed, and immediately I got what they were saying. I came to Behavior 8 years ago. It was my anniversary last year, so 8 years. And literally, I think the first week, I knew that I had found my home. Like, this is where I will retire. This is perfect for me. It's a great company. And that was what Behavior was 8 years ago, because the company has changed drastically in the last few years, mainly due to the success of Dead by Daylight.
So now on to Dead by Daylight. You were always a fan of video games, I gather, but were you always a fan of horror when you were a young kid?
No. My slightly older sister was, and she was watching stuff that I watched through, my fingers and screamed and had nightmares. So as a general rule, I wouldn't call myself a horror fan. I do enjoy the theatrics and the intensity and the beautiful imagery that comes with it. So when we started Dead by Daylight, it was mostly me and Ash Pennell, who's the creative director. And he loves horror, and he loves playing as a survivor and getting the freaked out and getting the intense, you know, the joy of finally evading the killer. And I was just having a blast playing as the killer, because the killer doesn't get scared. The killer is just, you know, in charge, and it's very empowering experience. So it was perfect. We mostly played each our side. We tried the other one, but so we had two people sort of leading this project, and we both really preferred one side of the game to the other. And so we were both constantly pushing and pulling, and that dynamic, I think, is felt to this day in Dead by Daylight, where both sides are completely independent. But we essentially created two completely different games, two completely different experiences that sort of feed each other.
So let's expand on that. Let's talk about the concept and the genesis of this game. So how did it come from just an idea on a piece of paper to what it is today?
There's long been, and that's before I even came to Behavior, there's been this desire, this sort of fantasy to create a game in which you could live the role of a villain in a horror movie. Like, we thought it'd be super cool to make a game where you could be the villain in a horror movie. And we tried a few different ways. And at the time, we absolutely needed an external publisher, especially because digital publishing was not really a thing yet. So most of the publishers were telling us that horror didn't sell. and that nobody was interested, unless you're like maybe Resident Evil or Silent Hill or something. But if not, don't bother. So we decided to sort of switch it up a little bit and set this game in the world of like the Care Bears or something. So what we did was a game where you live in a world of enchantment with bears called Sunbeam and Chuckles. And then one of them is called Naughty Bear. And he doesn't get invited to parties, so he decides to kill them all. And that was super silly. It was way over the top, but it was kind of fun. And that's sort of the spiritual ancestor to Dead by Daylight. That being said, at some point, we had a very talented designer who had a little bit of free time on his hand, and he decided to create a prototype, which was essentially just hide and seek. Like one person trying to do a thing, a generic thing, it didn't matter, and one person who's just trying to find them, and if he finds you, you're dead. And that super simple prototype, it was literally just gray boxes running around a gray box environment, and it was already super fun. And then someone had the bright idea of trying to mix that in with the old dream of making a horror game. And it was immediately obvious that we had something good.
Yeah, I really liked Naughty Bear. That was a really fun game.
It was.
So the game is out there. It's sold over 5 million copies to date.
No. Yes, over 5 for sure.
Right.
I think we passed 7 now.
Oh my god. Yeah, the figure guy was from like last year, so kudos on the adding 2 more million to that number. Did you expect in your wildest dreams they would ever be this massively popular? Like at what point?
Never.
At what point?
And it's funny because like when we launched, we thought, you know, if we break even, we'll be happy. We'll just move on to our next project. We'll have done something fun. Yay. And that was the first week, essentially. We broke even, I think, the first week or two. And then we're like, oh my God, this is picking up. We should put some energy into it. We should keep feeding it. We'll see how long it goes. And then literally, if you had told me, 2 years ago, we did our anniversary and we told people we're here to stay. It's amazing. We're going to keep supporting this game for years and years to come. And we thought we were at the peak of what Dead by Daylight was going to be. And we were just saying, you know, it's really nice. We'll keep like this forever. And then, you know, a couple of months ago, actually a month ago, we released Stranger Things. And even that chapter released, the announcement, it was so huge, so ridiculously loud. Today, Dead by Daylight has more players playing at any given moment than any other time in its history. So it just won't stop.
So if you wanted to stop, you really couldn't at this point.
No. It's out of our hands.
So that's a good segue to the killer designs and the killers themselves. I want to touch upon, what's that process like when you're designing an original killer for Dead by Daylight?
Some of them start from the character and the look, the story or the imagery, and some of them start from the power. Like sometimes we'll say, okay, we want to do a killer that, I don't know, turns invisible. And then we sort of prototype the power and make sure it's fun, and then we find a look for it, which was the case for the Wraith, for instance. And then sometimes it starts with the story, with the lore, and we decide to find the right power to go around it. Like the clown, for instance. Mm-hmm. We decided we were going to make a clown. We decided he was going to be a super creepy, not supernatural character. He needed to not be a spirit or a demon or, he didn't have supernatural powers. He actually just throws bottle of weird gases that he made himself, and then he cuts people's fingers and licks them.
Alrighty, that sounds totally terrifying. Do you find yourselves watching a lot of horror media to draw inspiration for these designs, or is it just you're just sitting me there in the office? Yeah,
me personally, no, not so much. But some of our concept artists, some of our environment artists are, yes, fortunately, most of them are big horror fans. Because the reference folders that we have here are pretty terrifying.
So they consume all the media while you just sit back and just with your hands over your eyes, essentially.
Yeah, exactly.
Any amusing or interesting designs that didn't quite make it to the final game? Just kind of sitting on the cutting room floor? Like
we tried a lot of different perks and powers over the last 3.5 years. And some of them were just, there's no way to make them work. I think the most famous was in the original prototype, we had a flying killer. A killer that could just fly anywhere around the map and then sort of dive on people. And it's so ridiculously overpowered. Like there was no version of it that ever made it even remotely possible to implement. It would be super cool. But and then the artists would just explode because the world has been built without a top, so you can't see it from above.
See, that sounds like a Jeepers Creepers, if I heard of it, right there for a nice little license killer.
Yeah, the license killers also are very interesting because we you know, a lot of them you see in movies, and movies are a very different medium, and we need to be able to find a good way to use our gameplay mechanics to present them in a way that honors what they stand for, but it still makes sense within our game. So it's kind of a tough one, this one.
Right. So what's that process like when you're essentially selecting the licensed killer between actually, first of all, will it work in the game and then acquiring said license to actually put it in Dead by Daylight?
Well, we talk about it internally beforehand, because once in a while it's them reaching out to us. If not, it's us really wanting a specific one and trying to reach out to them. But there's always the first step is always like, will it make sense in the game? Will it fit thematically and in terms of gameplay mechanics? It needs to be the right one more than anything. There's some really cool concepts out there. There's some really cool characters out there that will just probably never make it into the game just because we'd have to transform them so much to make them fit that it wouldn't do them justice.
Right. And you've leaned in pretty heavily into horror slasher movie icons like your Michael Myers, your Freddy Krueger, your Leatherface, your Ghostface, for example. Have you considered maybe possible video game horror icons like a Pyramid Head or a Scissor Man from Clock Tower as a killer?
Yes.
I love that answer. All right. So with that being said, what would be your dream licensed killer and survivor? Like, let's get full green light from anyone you ever asked. There was no issue with rights. Just, it's your dream. It's your wish. It would happen automatically. Who would it be?
Pennywise.
Wow, Pennywise.
I'm a huge fan of Stephen King.
Mm-hmm.
I love what he does. And it's a difficult one to get a hold of.
Because I was going to say you did Stranger Things with when the third season came out. Now there's a whole Stephen King resurgence with it, and then we have the Doctor Sleep coming out in a couple of weeks. What about a Cujo or a killer car, Christine? That'd be a fun killer.
It's funny because our creative director Dave Richard is probably even a bigger Stephen King fan than I am, and it's one of the two things that he keeps coming up with when people ask him what weird licenses he wants. Cujo and Christine are probably the top of his list.
Ah, those are some great. I got a puppy. I named him Cujo. He's about 5 months old. little fun fact. He is not a killer at all, and he just got his rabies shot. So there goes that dream from ever being a killer.
Oh,
so there's that.
Oh, well.
Oh, but Carrie would be a fun one.
There's like you can name like the top 10 horror icons, and a lot of people, you know, that list is pretty much always the same wherever you go. You come back to the same 5 or 10.
Right.
But that list is shrinking now. There's really not that many big ones that we don't have in the game.
Mm-hmm. I mean, would you go obscure? Like a very niche, sort of like very, not as hugely popular, but just it has a cult following, like a pumpkin
head. Maybe, but probably not that niche. We'd much rather, because we create some really cool original characters.
You do.
And when we do, we are able to create way more customization, for instance, which is super fun, well appreciated by players. Licenses are much harder to, you know, make variations and do declinations. So we have a lot more freedom when we do original chapters, and it allows us to go into, you know, mythology and folklore and local legends of different cultures, which is essentially a never-ending well of inspiration. As far as the obscure licenses go, it's a lot of work, and I'm not sure it's totally worth it, but some of them would be really cool, and I'm not saying we'll never do that.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a few, like, let's say, more cult, more obscure, but if I had to name one, I'd probably go for Pinhead.
I like you more than I did 5 minutes ago. So I want to go into some listener questions now. This is from Mr. Nuff, a.k.a. Matt Murray. He asks...
Hi, Matt.
He asks, asymmetrical gameplay wasn't really a huge market when you guys first launched. And with the failure of Evolve, it seemed to signal that it wouldn't be a viable genre. What about Dead by Daylight do you think broke that mold? And as a follow-up, do you feel partially responsible for almost reviving a genre that seemed DOA?
Well, I don't think it's a revival, because I don't think it was ever really a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously a very interesting design idea, and it yields some really fun gameplay. We can see it in Dead by Daylight, but I will say this, it is extremely difficult to do correctly, and I know that we've done a few things very well on Dead by Daylight, but I think that it's a very we're at the beginning of what this new type of gameplay can be. We've done a few things right. I think that in 20 years the asymmetrical games that will come will obviously borrow or be heavily inspired by some of the things we've done in Dead by Daylight, but I am hopeful that there will also be a bunch of new things that people have discovered, new rules on how to do this properly and do it better, that will have been discovered by a ton of the games that we have either inspired or that we've opened the door for.
Yeah, because you guys, the one thing you guys do really well is you really capture on the survivor side that sort of sense of dread, and at any moment you can be killed. And when I play a multiplayer game, you know, I usually try to help my team, but for the most part, I'm looking out for myself. I'm not quick to sacrifice myself, is what I'm saying, in a multiplayer game. But when I play Dead by Daylight, almost instinctively, I want to, if anyone's on that goddamn hook, I want to pull them off immediately.
You're right. One of the things that I think Dead by Daylight does well is create real human reactions. It really taps into something that feels real enough that you will have like sweaty palms, and your heart will race, and you will actually have genuine jump scares. And those questions, like, do I go and rescue you? Do I leave while I have a chance? Do you know how bold am I gonna be? Do I go in the basement or not? Because that's where you are. These questions, they're silly and they're a game, but they become very significant and very real in Dead by Daylight.
Because I feel if any of us were on that hook, we'd want our friend to come and save us at the end of
obviously.
The day.
Obviously. but also, you know, I just saved you, and then later I get on a hook, and then you pass by, and the killer is around, and you go, oh, my God. Ugh. And then you see that the end game collapse has started, and you're like, you know, I'm not going to go save him. I'm sorry. And you sort of, I see you, and you see me, and you go, sorry. And then you leave, and these moments happen time and time again in Dead by Daylight, and they are magical every time.
Yeah, I'm usually, like, when I first started playing, I was that whoops, sorry guy. But as you play more, like, again, that sense to sort of help out your fellow man, and it's total strangers most of the time. I feel compelled to rescue. Like, I don't know you.
Nobody's a Dwight, and you know Dwight.
Oh, yeah, everyone's a Dwight. Deep down, we're all just Dwight.
Yeah. But that's part of it. And I think that also one of the things that helps that is the fact that the victory conditions are so very blurry in our game. Because in the end, we're not telling you, like we used to tell that, especially to the killer, like the entity is displeased, a shameful defeat or things like that. And now we don't. We just give you a bunch of points and we're like, okay, this game is now done. Move on. These are the things you did while you were in there. And that makes it so that each decision you make during gameplay is not, it's not always, the decision is not going to be based off of the ultimate end result of escape or not, or victory or not. It's really based off of the situation that's happening right now. There's someone on a hook that needs help. Am I going to go help them or not?
So we should take your game and give it to the UN as the greatest tool for peace in our time, is what I'm hearing you say.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, let's do that. No, but it's true that in a sense it can be a very therapeutic tool. It can help you work through some stress, let's say.
Right. And again, it captures that sense, like a lot of games that try to do horror, they don't get under your bones in a way that this game does. Because when you're sitting there trying to fix that generator, or you're wrapping up a friend to heal them, there's that underlying fear that most horror games can't quite even touch upon.
It's true. And it was very difficult to recreate that in a game that is not a narrative experience.
Right.
Because when you're doing a super scripted narrative experience, you can use like jump scare and you can build up the tension much easier because you know exactly what's going to happen when. And in our game, we had to do it in a different way. But that's the thing, is now uncertainty is our biggest tool in the game. And so adding more content, having more players helps with that. You know, every time we add a new killer, every time we had a new power set, new perks, new environments, you're going to have a new dose of that uncertainty.
So, speaking on generators, this question comes from our resident superfan, Zach Buzz Killington.
Oh, yeah.
It could be a simple yes or no answer for this if you want, but he asks, any plans on adding new maps with other objectives other than repairing generators?
It's a very touchy question, and it's not a simple question.
Okay. All right.
What I will say is, new objectives and new ways to play the game is a very hot debate. It's been since day one. We're doing a version of that right now by adding the archives, which are coming out next week.
Mm-hmm.
And that will give you essentially new perspective on some of the things to do in the game and new ways and new objectives, new ways to play the game. But it's not what he means, where we remove the generators and now what you have to do is get all the parts and bring them to the car. And then
right.
This is probably not something we want to do, at least not in that way. But that doesn't mean that we're not going to change things up in the future.
Okay, gotcha. That's a fair enough. Great answer, by the way. Very satisfied by that answer. So you touched before on about just adding more content to this game. Micropwned asks, at what point do you end support for a game like this and move on to a sequel instead of just adding chapters indefinitely?
When the last player closes the application.
Oh my God. So as long as one person out there is playing in its current form, then by day.
Maybe I'm being a little overly dramatic here, but that's the intention. As long as people are actively enjoying the game, as long as they're playing the game and they're eager for more content, as long as the next chapter gathers as much enthusiasm as it still does, there's no sane reason for us to divert any of our energy or attention away from this game.
Amen to that. Okay, so let's move on to some Reddit questions right now. And surprisingly, this was asked by a bunch of people. Who's your favorite killer and survivor in the game? Big shocker this was asked.
All right. So killer, I used to answer Hag without hesitation for many years. I still think that she's the best for jump scares. But lately I've been playing a lot of clown, and it's just too much fun. So I'll say those. Also, the clown has some of the coolest outfits that we have in the game.
And
as far as survivors go, I'm still very partial to Nia. I think she's always gonna be she's gonna have a special place in my heart. But Jane is kind of hot.
So the hotness factor is what you usually go by. For your
no, but I just wanted to mention that in passing.
All right. Unliteracy asks, what was the most difficult decision your team faced during development of Dead by Daylight?
The most difficult decision? I don't know. You'd probably have to ask everyone, and it might be a different answer from every single person out there. It's tough. I mean, every day we have to cut some really, really cool idea in favor of something else that we want to do. And I think that that's probably the most painful, if not the most difficult. If we go back to the beginning of the project, especially at the time when I was a producer on it and I had to make some hard calls, we made some very, I'd say, very bold cuts before we launched. Things like not having any tutorial, not having any, keyboard customization tools, nothing. So that we could bring in another killer, so that we could have, three killers when we launched or another environment. These were really tough decisions. I think they were the right ones in retrospect. But I'd say probably the toughest decisions, the most painful decisions that we face on a regular basis are that is because there's a lot of really cool ideas, a lot of really great things that we want to do. But every day it's a matter of picking between this one and this one. We only have a limited bandwidth, a limited number of people, and we have to make choices.
Yeah, I think on the tutorial side, in any case, that was a good choice to make because I feel for a game like this, to be thrown in is the best way to experience it with as little hand-holding as possible.
Well, we had to add tutorials when we released on console.
Right.
Because console players, PC players usually have a second monitor and they have YouTube or Twitch playing on the side and they can get the information and they have the wiki and all of it. Mm-hmm. Console players are a different breed. And if they don't have all the information that they need right now on that screen, they'll tend to just shut it down and move on to something else. So we actually put the efforts to make a more thorough onboarding at that time. And it was a benefit to everybody. It's a different thing. But it's true. This game, that like I was saying, uncertainty. So yes, being thrown into the game right now, and it couldn't be daunting because the game has grown so much in 3.5 years. There's so many perks, so many powers, and new players get a little overwhelmed, but it doesn't take away from the core fun of the experience.
Yeah, because I was playing up until when Michael Myers was released. And I took a very long hiatus from the game, and I came back when Ghostface was just about to come out, and it felt like it felt like a whole different game to me. It looked tons better. It played so much smoother, and I was like, "Why did I stop playing this game for so long?"
Yeah. One of the things we wanted to do actually on that note is because, you know, I mean, there's always going to be people complaining, and that's fine, and saying that the game is in a horrible state. And some days it is. I'll say that. But we also wanted to give people the option to launch the game like it was on day one when we launched it with just the Trapper, the Hillbilly, and the Raid, and just the four survivors, and see what it was like back then without the endgame collapse, without the ability to kick the generators, without so many things, and see just how far we've come.
So as a follow-up to that, what was the most fun chapter that you've worked on?
Oh, the most fun? That's rough.
It is. There's a lot of fun chapters you guys released.
Yeah. Maybe it's because it's recent, but Stranger Things was so much fun because working with Netflix was a pleasure. They were super enthusiastic. I had just, you know, we were working on it while season 3 was being released. So we had a few scoops as we were doing that. And then we watched the show and we were right in the middle of it. So it was very exciting. It was a super fun one to do. And I think that having two survivors, and especially these two, and then having the killer come in, the Demogorgon, our first monster, it was super fun. It was super fun.
And you guys got some lines of dialogue for the survivors as well.
No.
Well, not for Steven, for...
No. The only words being spoken in the game are spoken by Mr. Bruce Campbell.
Oh, yeah, Bruce Campbell is the voice dialogue, correct, yes. What was that like, getting him to record some dialogue for you guys?
It's kind of a bucket list item, I'd say. Mr. Bruce Campbell is a legend. There's no two ways about it. And he was super nice. He was very generous with his time. And we recorded a bunch of stuff that will never air because there's way too much. But it was really a blast.
Yeah, because he's like the B-movie horror icon. So
absolutely. And that's the thing, is iconic survivors are very few. There's not that many characters that really fit what survivors need to be in our game. And he's one of them.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to have... He's like... I mean, Tommy Jarvis also. But Bruce is the epitome, like, survivor in a horror franchise.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you have Nancy from Nightmare on Elm Street, but she got offed in the third movie. So sad. All right, so this next question, I'm really glad it's being asked, because I wasn't asked it originally. Comes from Baby Dwight.
Okay.
I really want to play this game on the Switch, but I don't want to go through leveling up my characters again. Any plans for cross saves?
Yes, we're considering it. It's not a simple matter. I'm not going to go into technical details or the challenges, but it's something that we would like to offer our players, obviously.
Okay. All right. That's good. Fair enough. This next one comes from Heisen Xberg. Any plans on adding Xbox One X or PS Pro support as having higher resolutions and graphics settings on those platforms?
Yes.
Okay. And he also asks, Quentin...
No. I'm sorry, sir, but this is the extent of
sure.
Your
So... His next question is a Quentin Smith redesign. How's that coming along?
Oh. Anytime we have negotiations or conversations with third parties, obviously these conversations are extremely confidential.
Mm-hmm.
But as some people have noticed, there were some conversations, some public bits and some private bits of conversation on that. So there is that's it. There are conversations that have happened.
Okay. And he also asks, what was that Tony Hawk tweet about?
Well, that's it.
Are you done for the day? Are we leaving now? Interview over?
I was asking for a friend.
Is Marie jabbing you in the back with a shiv right now? I hear she's giggling, that's for sure.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm giving him the look.
The look. All right, let's move on to, I think, some less controversial line of questioning then.
But I do like to mess with people, though.
You do. You do. Do you take your cues from Ed Boon?
No.
If I was in your position, I would, on a daily basis, fuck with people on Twitter. Just because you've mentioned before in interviews how you hide cryptic things and messages in Dead by Daylight.
Yeah.
I would put that in there just to throw everyone off altogether.
I try not to put things in the game if I can help it. Not personally. Some others do it. But no, I have other ways.
All right. So these next questions come from TPS124. And they ask, why do certain characters seem to be prioritized in terms of cosmetics, like Claudette and Meg, get a lot of cosmetics as opposed to other ones?
Well, we tend to go by how much they're played. So if we see that there are many more Meg mains and Claudette mains out there, we tend to give these people a few more cycles in the rotation. But we do want to give outfits and things to everybody. The thing is, now we're at, I don't know, 17 survivors or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and every 3 months we release at least a new one. So there's a lot of characters to go through. But yeah, I mean, if we were to go 6 months without giving an outfit to Claudette or Meg, I think we'd be in trouble.
Any opportunity to get unmissed event outfits like the Huntress Hound Mask or David's Untamed Donkey Jacket via the store?
That's a conversation that we're having right now. We created these outfits originally so we'd have something to give out to people at events and special events. And they were exclusives to PC because we couldn't make those codes work through the PS4 or Xbox One systems. And so once we released the consoles, we sort of stopped doing that because we didn't want to piss off our console players because we liked them.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, there are conversations right now happening on whether we should put those in the store so that others could get them. And then people are saying, no, the people who actually got them, you know, they want to feel special, and they're like, okay, but maybe everybody could get their hands on it now that the others have had exclusive use of them for 2 years. So yeah, it's an ongoing conversation.
So you mentioned not pissing off the console players. What's the reception been like on the console side? And the Switch was just launched specifically.
Great. Right now, our player base is about equal on PC, PS4, Xbox One, and the Switch is quickly joining the ranks. So for us, the Dead by Daylight community is absolutely multi-platform. There's no there's no main SKU, if you mm-hmm. will.
Wow. Okay, that's really good to hear. So if that's the case, any cross-play plans in the future?
Ideally, yes. It's not just up to us. And there's a lot of technical hoops to jump through, but it would be great. I mean, Dead by Daylight thrives on more and more players. We'd get, you know, better matchmaking times. We'd get better rank matches, everything. So, yeah, it's something we would love to do.
Right. We've discussed accessibility in this podcast in the past, and someone asked, Kill Lumbee asked, what are your thoughts on adding color options for those who are colorblind?
It's on our wish list. It's really something we want to do. We looked at a lot of different options. The biggest challenge for us is really because of how much the visuals have a direct impact on gameplay balance. So if we make a mode where you can change the color scheme so that the colors are different for your whatever color blindness type you have, and if one of them actually gives you an advantage or gives people an advantage, then we run the risk of having most people switch to that mode, and then that becomes the default Dead by Daylight look, and it's touchy. So we want to make sure that we do it correctly.
All right. So before we wrap this up to our fun little game app plan for us, I have a couple of not so serious questions that came about also on Reddit. This is just from the face of Bo. He just says, "Tell him he's great." So you're great. That's all he says. Oh, that's what he wanted to say.
Well, thank you.
Morthal Guard wanted to know why you're so swole and that you're an absolute unit.
I think you just broke Marie.
You did!
I don't know how to answer that.
What's your diet like? What's your gym regimen? That's good. Let's get deep. The deep dive, after all.
I eat a lot, and then I gym
a lot.
No, I don't actually. I'd say eat everything and then have some vigorous sex, I guess.
I love it. That sounds great. And finally, the last question I want to ask you, I think it's on all of our minds. This comes from Alex Cool PS. He asks, will Dead by Daylight ever come to the Soulja Boy console?
I have no idea what you're talking about. Should I?
I envy you for not knowing that, for what that is.
Now I'll have to look. Thanks.
Okay, so to end our interview, which has been great, you've been amazing, by the way. I appreciate you so much. Let's do a rapid fire, and the theme is licensed killer characters.
All right.
So your options are, yes, you've considered it, no, you haven't, or who? So we're approaching chapter 14, and I'm sure you're all veiled secrecy about that, so you won't dive into that too much, but we'll throw some options out here and just a simple yes or no or who, and we can wrap this up. How's that sound?
All right. Okay. Who, as in I don't know who you're talking about?
Yes, like Soulja Boy, for example.
Yes. Okay.
All right.
Let's do this.
Chucky.
Yes.
Pinhead.
Yes.
Candyman.
Yes.
Pumpkinhead.
No. That's not true. We considered it, and then we said no.
All right. The Tall Man.
No.
Hannibal Lecter.
No.
Patrick Bateman.
No.
Angela Baker.
I don't think it was considered. No.
Wow, I thought that was going to be a who, to be honest, but the fact that you know who that is makes me really happy. This one you may not know, though. Dr. Hyder.
Who?
So he was the doctor from The Human Centipede.
Oh, okay.
And that can make for a fun survivor as well. Well, three in one, basically.
No.
And lastly, the Babadook.
I'd say it was probably considered. Yes.
All right. And of course, I want to say Pennywise, but obviously, since he's your dream licensed killer, the answer is yes to that one.
Yeah. He is an absolute unit.
All right. So, Matt, where can our listeners find you, Dead by Daylight? Plug everything at this point. You have free reign, open floor. Go for it.
Click here. No. So Dead by Behavior is our official Twitter. Deadbydaylight.com, I guess, is our official website. But you knew that already. You can follow us on Facebook, I guess, if you're my mother. other than that, I mean, our Instagram is full of our cool stories of what's happening. Twitter is probably the best place to get all your news. And me personally, I mean, don't. No, you can. I don't even know what my Twitter is. At mcote.
Doctor.
No, that's Instagram. So I have no clue.
And finally,
find me.
Yes.
Serious like that.
Well, if you're that swole, it can be hard to find, I would imagine.
Yeah. I must be the only one for sure.
And finally, what would you say to our listeners who have yet to play Dead by Daylight? What's your quick pitch to get them into the game today?
I'll say, obviously, you've seen people play the game. You've watched people play the game on YouTube or on Twitch. You've heard your friends talk about it. Now's the time. The game's probably on sale somewhere right now. It always is nowadays. And there's so much amazing content for you to discover there. I will tell you, it is the only place in the world where you can play as Nancy Wheeler from Stranger Things next to Laurie Strode from Halloween and Ash Williams on the other side get chased by Ghostface in the school that Freddy Krueger used to haunt. It's insane, the breadth of legendary horror that you can find in this game. It is now the one place if you want to play a horror game.
I think that is the best place to end this. Matt, Marie, thank you so much for being a part of
pleasure.
Thank you for being a part of our Horror Month celebration. And yeah, that's it. So back all to right. Our regularly scheduled program.
Cool. Well, thank you very much. That was actually quite a lot of fun.
All right, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Thank you very much, Andy. And before we kick it to the end of the show, I want to tell you a little bit about our sponsor, MeltedPins.com. MeltedPins.com is a website where Kelsey Lynn creates these fantastic tattoo art inspired pins, buttons, canvas bags, coffee mugs, all these fun, crazy stuff. If you watch the video version of the show on YouTube, on my microphone, I have a cool enamel pin that she made. Just fantastic stuff. And if you go to MeltedPins.com and use the checkout code NDSMelted, that's NDSMelted, you get 10% your order. I mean, you can't go wrong. Go there, support your local artists, support the small artists out there in the world, and you're going to get 10% off just for doing so, just because we sent you there. So again, that's MeltedPins.com. Promo code at the end, the rare when you're checking out and all that fun stuff, NDSMelted. That's NDSMelted. All right, now back to the show. And we are back. A fantastic interview, Andy. I think we should do more of these. They're really fun to do. Great job, dude.
Right. I think we thank you. I think we maybe confirmed the next chapter in this game.
We may have accidentally done that.
Yeah. You know, if
we'll let you decide. Yeah, you write to us and say, hey, you did it, you guys. You got him to spill the beans. you did it. Well, anyway, that is going to do it for us on this episode. This was a special episode. It's going to be all interview. We're going to get back to the news either in the middle of the week or we'll get into the news next week. Oh, my God. Why do women have to yell at each other when they speak? Why? I'm not even going to cut that out, just so you all hear it.
Listen, that's how the show
is. My wife is a hairdresser, and they yell at each other. What can I tell you? They just gossip. They talk a lot. Yes, we'll get back to the regular news. Either we'll do another show this week, depending on how thick the news is. I know we are recording this weekend, so we'll probably do that. And I don't know, maybe that'll release either also on Monday. We're not sure exactly how we're going to scatter that about. But either way, you stay tuned and you know, hang tight. Remember, you can follow us all on social media. We are at NDS Podcast. I am at BatChild27. Andy is at PantsGuy. And did you get the socials for everybody on Dead by Daylight?
Of course.
What do you got?
It's Amateur Hour.
All right. Hook it up.
Oh, I should say it again. It's in the interview.
Oh, you did an outro? I didn't get to the end.
No, I asked him before we signed off.
Oh, okay, great. So you got that. So yeah, scrub back to the
right,
if you really want that. Anyway, you could follow. Remember, go to dualscreens.com for all of your dual screens and Nintendo dual screens stuff. If you could sub to our YouTube channel, that'd be great. Our Twitch channel is twitch.tv/dualscreenstreams. Thank you, Zazu Pitts of Sourdough Productions, for our theme song. Thank you, Matt Murray, for our Twitch overlays. Thank you, Dan Colonna of Dinosaur Machines Podcast at Hitbuttons Gaming and twitch.tv/DanOMac for our Nintendo dual screens logo. Thank you, Andrew Douglas, for all of our incredible podcast art. You've been absolutely killing it. We're getting nothing but compliments for our Nintendo Dual Screens podcast art for the month of October. And you can follow Andrew at Angimoto, A-N-G-I-M-O-T-O. All right, Andy, is there anything you want to tell the kids before we go?
Yeah, we're recording with Sunscorch Studios next, who is making a game called Negative Atmosphere, which is, if you miss Dead Space, miss it no more. It's back, essentially, in this game.
And yeah, it's
fucking
very
phenomenal.
Exciting stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's an actual game there. I don't know how much of it is a game, how much of it is just, like, tech demos at this point. But
oh, no, there was a gameplay reveal I did. Like, a legit, it's up and running.
Well, maybe we'll have to ask him about it. And, of course, there's no news about Nintendo for this game, but it's a spooky game, and who knows? Maybe there will be some Nintendo news that they'll say. All right. That's it, folks. This has been Nintendo Dual Screens episode 121 for the week of October 21st. If you want to listen to this episode's pre- and or post-show shenanigans, head over to patreon.com/NDS podcast, where you can get an extra hour or so of content each and every week, which is those pre- and or post-shows. All right, until next time, take care, and thank you, Andy, for doing the interview. It was fantastic. And until next time, please be excellent to each other.